At Subway, start 2010 right with surprisingly low-fat choices. The Piled High Subway Club or Turkey Melt, fresh toasted under bubbly cheese. Both are part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simple way to enjoy eating better. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, part two of the Mega NFL Playoff Podcast. We have Cousin Sal and Mike Lombardi in part one. Part two coming up a little bit later. Chad Moman from ESPN The Magazine, our Vegas expert. But right now, footballoutsiders.com. And a guy I should have listened to last week and did not. He's on the Subway Fresh Tech Hotline. Aaron Schatz, what's happening?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Well, you tried to warn me about the Bengals. You tried to warn me about the Ravens. And you tried to warn me about the Cowboys. And or did you try to warn? Did you warn me about the Cowboys?
We did believe the Cowboys were the better team, yes.
Yeah. So you went 3-1 because I think you had the Packers over
the
Cardinals.
We had the Packers.
Yeah.
And that game was unreal.
Yes. You don't mind losing that one.
Never seen a quarterback play as well as Warner did against a defense that good.
And Rodgers, you know, I thought was amazing the way
right.
he kept the pack in the game. It was one of the best quarterback games I've ever watched.
Yes. And you don't want to also, the other thing is you don't want to sound like sour grapes, but you do see some of the missed penalties and just shake your head. It's just, you know, I mean, I've had people email me with, you know, talking about of conspiracies, and my belief is never look for a conspiracy when incompetence is a better explanation.
Yep.
But there were just, I mean, if certain points this year they were flagging you for breathing on the quarterback, it just doesn't make any sense.
You're talking about the face mask at the very end.
Yeah. Now, I mean, listen, they could have called that face mask and actually made it on the fumble return,
yeah.
which would have then given the Cardinals the ball, just not a touchdown, and they would have assuredly scored at that point. But at least at that point, the rules are being called consistently.
You know who begs to differ with your assuredly scored comment? Neil Rackers.
That's true.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that was a shank of all shanks.
Oh, my
that
God.
That wasn't even just slightly missed. I mean, that was like 100 bazillion yards off. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
The best part was you could see it coming because they kept showing him warming up, and he looked like he was pooping in his pants.
You just wanted to tell him that you let him off the hook?
So
we let them off the hook, the Packers, who were who you thought they were.
Well, if Aaron Rodgers connects with Greg Jennings on the first play of OT, you're
4-0. One or 2 feet away.
Yeah.
1 or 2 feet away.
Too bad. So what did we learn from round one?
We learned that the Cardinals' defense was definitely overrated because of the poor schedule they played, and the Packers' defense was probably also overrated due to the poor schedule that they played.
Yeah.
I think... you know, we learned that the Cowboys are super hot right now. And, but otherwise, I mean, you know, the games went, they were bigger blowouts, I think, than, you know, you would have expected otherwise, because there were a lot of just weird bounces that went weird ways. I mean, you know, a lot of the mistakes that the Patriots made in that game, 9 out of 10 games, they don't make that mistake. And, you know, the Ravens may play better and win, but they don't win by quite as much. And I think that was the case with a lot of those games. You know, Carson Palmer was just completely off. Shane Graham missing field goals. I think, we know basically the same things about the Ravens, Cowboys, and Jets that we knew beforehand. I think, you know, the one thing that we learned in particular was that the Cardinals' defense is probably really not that good, that Kurt Warner has an amazing ability to turn it up in the playoffs, and that Early Doucette is finally seems to have matured into an NFL receiver, which is a good thing for the Cardinals.
Well, you had you finished the regular season. You had the Baltimore Ravens as your number one team, ranked by your formula.
Yeah, for the full year in the weighted rankings that were more weight towards recent games, we actually had the Packers number one,
okay.
Baltimore two.
So, and I think we talked about this. Or I wrote about it or both, but we were saying that the Ravens. You said last week you thought the Ravens potentially could have gone 15-1, and we had that whole conversation.
Well, I don't think 15-1.
They
had a lot of close losses to good teams, and they definitely seemed to shoot themselves in the foot with really badly timed, dumb, unnecessary roughness type penalties.
Yeah. So,
and roughing the passer. I mean, it gets you back to the whole business with the breathing on quarterbacks. It seems like if the Ravens breathe on a quarterback, that's a roughing the passer. And no matter who it is, I know some people will say that's just Tom Brady, but I think it's more about who the defense is. And, you know, they got flagged for that stuff a lot this year.
So they needed a win like what they had yesterday to kind of say, all right, now we know we can win a game like that.
True, although, you know, you want to wonder, the quarterback did not play well when he did have to actually throw the ball.
Mr. Flacco?
Yeah, Mr. Flacco.
He did not play well. And that's what killed me about that game more than anything, is that we never made Joe Flacco have to really make a play.
And the Colts will feel differently about that.
The Colts will feel differently. Now, your stats said that Brady had a much better season than people realized because of the defenses he went against. He was awful yesterday.
Yeah, but that's just one game.
No, but I'm saying he was just awful. Like,
oh, he was awful yesterday. Yeah, there's no question about it.
And I have a feeling that, you know, I heard that he broke his ribs a month ago. I don't think he's been healthy since the Saints game.
And Moss was clearly not healthy.
Yeah, something was wrong with Moss.
He was limping. And Sam Aiken is not a starting wide receiver. Let's not fool ourselves here.
Right.
He's a special teams player.
Well, when you're looking at this Patriots team now going forward, are you feeling good? Are you feeling not good? Are you feeling...
I'm feeling the way that you should feel when you root for a team that's one of the best teams in the league, but not completely dominant. You know, I think Patriots fans, we've gotten spoiled by the victories. And the way it usually works when you're a good team is that your favorite team makes it to the playoffs most years, and a couple of years you'll have a really outstanding year. But this is better than being a Lions fan. You know, this is better than being a Browns fan. And I don't see the Patriots turning into an 8-8 team next year. I think you're going to see a team that goes 10-6 or 11-5 again and either wins the division or gets a wild card again. You know, there have been so many articles written about the end of the dynasty and the end of the dominance, and the people are just, you know, wringing their hands over this. They're still a really good team. People had sort of convinced themselves that they were some sort of ridiculous, mighty juggernaut that they either absolutely loved or absolutely hated. And, you know, people despise the Patriots in a way they don't other successful NFL teams. But what they are is a successful NFL team, like the Colts, like the Eagles, like the Steelers. It just so happens they've had a little bit more success than those teams in the playoffs. But it's, like I said, it's better than being a Lions fan.
So basically everything you just said made the Eagles fans nod silently to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, listen, of those teams that I just named, the Eagles are the team that's had the worst luck in the playoffs, and the Patriots are the team that's played best in the playoffs. And the Steelers are, you know, the Steelers have gone up and down a little bit more from season to season than the Colts and the Patriots have. But, you know, those are the four teams that dominated the last decade. The Colts, the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Eagles. And for some reason, people had grown this hatred of the Patriots because of those four teams. They were the most successful. And because of the way that the national media wrote about them at times, like they had some kind of superpowers.
Yeah.
But in reality, they're just one of the four best teams of the last decade. And I don't see any reason to believe that those four teams will stop being successful next year. I think the Steelers will bounce back and be a playoff team again. I think the Eagles will be good again. I think the Colts will still be good. And I think the Patriots will still be good. And you and I, as people who grew up in Boston, are lucky to be fans of one of those teams and not, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucks.
I'm with you, but at the same time, I feel sad because I do wonder if, you know, the gravy train is over. And
well, if you wanted to be, you know, the super awesome, like the greatest team ever gravy train, yeah, this probably is over. But I mean, how many teams get to be that good for more than 3 or 4 years at a time?
Well, what about the whole Belichick's 58?
I'm Brady worried. Turns yes, 33. I agree with you.
Who are the blue chippers that we have? Like, you guys have all these individual player rankings. What kind of blue chippers does this team have?
Moss is still an excellent player. Brady is still one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the league.
Welker,
I'm worried about
post-surgery.
The whole Will Fork contract situation. They have a young, improving defense. So the problem is here, the problem is that the offense is on the downward trend, and the defensive line has contract issues, but the rest of the defense is on an upward trend. Things just didn't match at the same time. Does that make sense?
Well, it made sense to Belichick because it seems like he might have saw that coming. That
right, that if he had kept all those defenders, that yeah. defense would have really been on its last legs this year. But it's not. That defense is not yet as good as it should be if those guys develop. Now, we don't know if they will or not. It's possible that they won't. I think Belichick's an excellent coach. I don't think he has magic powers that ensure that there's no way that those guys will not flop. But, you know, given how well players have played in their first year or two and when they were drafted, I think you have to assume that a lot of the young players in the defense are going to continue to improve. The problem is that the defensive line, you run into these issues with are they going to re-sign Wilfork at the same time that the back seven is maturing. And then the offense, you know, they screwed up this year. You know, the Galloway thing was a screw-up. Getting rid of Greg Lewis was a screw-up, and that's how you end up with Sam Aiken as your second receiver. And, you know, Wes Welker and Julian Edelman serve a very specific role, and they really don't have good receivers other than Moss to fill the other roles.
You talked about the four teams that dominated the decade. If you had to rank the rosters of those four teams for how you'd want to go into the next decade, how would you rank them?
Oh, I would probably put the Colts first. They just do a really good job of drafting young defenders, and you got to like the young receivers. I think I would put the Eagles second.
I would have Steelers second.
Maybe the Patriots. The problem with the Steelers is the offensive line really is just in tatters.
But they have Roethlisberger, who I think if you're doing a fantasy draft of which guys you would pick from those four teams to start a team with, he'd be the first pick.
No way. Even though they're older, I would take Manning or Brady.
Really? You take
yep.
Manning over Roethlisberger?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yes.
How old is
Manning? Especially because Manning and Brady are pocket quarterbacks, and therefore, you know, it's not like part of what makes them so good will go away as they get older.
Isn't Roethlisberger like 25, though?
Yes, he's younger, but those guys, look, Manning and Brady are two of the five best quarterbacks I've ever played the game.
I'm saying for the whole decade, you have to have this team for the next 10 years. You would take Manning over Roethlisberger.
Yes.
Interesting. I would take the young guy.
And I think that the Colts and Patriots offensive lines are in better shape.
Yeah.
The defense, I mean, listen, the Steelers also do an amazing job of drafting young defenders and letting them sit on the bench for a year or two, and they don't even have to play for a while until they learn the system. Part of the reason why they had problems this year is like Ziggy Hood getting forced into the lineup earlier than they really wanted. I mean, it's just an amazingly well-run organization, and the odds that they're going to go 8-8 again next year are really small.
Well, they also had the year after.
Sorry, 9-7. Did they go 9-7?
Yeah.
The year after thing was never a big issue for Super Bowl winners, right?
No, but it was one of those years. You could tell from the moment that Lake Tahoe allegations, it just
seemed
like
Well, what they had was
awesome.
Look, Troy Polamalu got hurt. Okay, I mean, that was a huge, he is really valuable because his specific talents, their defense is so much built around his specific talents, that even if there are, you know, other defenders in the league are as good as him, you can't find someone who has the same skills. I mean, you can find somebody who has the same skills as Darrell Revis, but not as good. It's a lot harder to find somebody who has the same skills as Troy Polamalu, but not as good.
Injuries, distraction, bad luck.
Yeah.
All symptoms. And I thought it was interesting. I didn't even think about this, but one of the announcers said that Dallas was the healthiest team going into this year's playoffs.
They are. They have been the healthiest team this year. And they've been the healthiest team in the league for a couple, two out of the last 3 years, I think, by our injury metrics. We don't have the injury metric fully built for 09 yet, but, I mean, one of the things we need to look at this offseason is, in general, injury luck sort of returns to the average from year to year. And teams that are really healthy, like, for example, the Dolphins were really healthy last year, and this year kind of came back to normal. But it's possible certain teams really do have better training staffs and are going to be better than that from year to year, and the Cowboys definitely could be one of those teams.
God, it's hard to imagine a team having more injuries than the Pats this last 6 years.
They've had an amazing number of injuries. Yes, they've had an amazing number of injuries the last 6 years. And you want to know a team that's sort of similar, is interestingly enough, because they've had similar coaches, is Cleveland.
Oh.
Have had similar levels of injuries, especially in the secondary.
All right, let's talk about this week's games. AFC, Jets at Chargers.
Yeah, I was a little shocked when I ran my little pick against the spread thing this morning, and it came out thinking the Jets were going to win the game.
What?
I don't necessarily agree with it. It's a really interesting matchup of strengths and weaknesses.
I'm with you.
Because you're talking about, right, you have to ask yourself, will Revis shut down Vincent Jackson?
Yes.
Now, let's admit that Revis here has been better than the other top cornerbacks in the league this year. But The fact is that Chad Bailey couldn't shut down Vincent Jackson, Nnamdi Asamoah couldn't, and Leon Hall kind of did, but they really got past that by throwing everybody else. And against those teams with really standout cornerbacks, they also really threw to Antonio Gates a lot. So I think that's a lot of what you're going to get. Even if Revis can cut down Jackson, you're going to get a lot of Antonio Gates. The other question is, I'm not sure, how tall is Revis?
Can't remember.
I'm looking it up right now, and the answer is 5'11". Well, I mean, one of the things that makes the San Diego offense work is that those guys are so tall. You don't have to have tall receivers. There are good short receivers, just ask Steve Smith. But they have built an offense partly around having tall receivers. So you throw a jump ball, it doesn't matter how closely Darrell Revis is on Vincent Jackson has 6 inches on him. And that means a lot.
You know what we've changed the definition of the jump ball to, or the name of it?
What?
It's now called the Tyree.
Except that wasn't really a jump ball. You know, that was a in the middle of the field type play. That wasn't
heave up for grabs.
The, like, heave up for grabs in the corner of the end zone. Hey, look, Plaxico Burress is 6 inches taller than your guy, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Or Vincent Jackson.
Rivers can put that ball right on Vincent Jackson on the top, like right on the top of his helmet.
He's got unbelievable
consistently.
Touch. He's got unbelievable touch with his passes. Now, the interesting thing is also that the San Diego offense this year got successively worse the more blitzers came.
Ooh.
So here you have the Jets, who are probably going to send all kinds of people from all kinds of directions. You can't take your first tight end and leave him in the block because he's your best receiver if Revis does cover Jackson the way Revis has covered everyone else. So you're really dependent on your running back, fullback. If you want to go with Brandon Malayuma and a two tight end, you're really trying to block those guys. That being said, the Jets have injury issues on the rest of their secondary. And if Revis can find Malcolm Floyd, you know, and those other guys, Gates, he can tear the Jets apart without even needing Jackson. And then the other part of this matchup that's so interesting is the Chargers' run defense has been horrible this year. The Jets are all about running the ball.
It's definitely the team I bet the Jets wanted to play.
Oh, yeah.
They had their choice.
Oh, this is a way better matchup for them than the Colts. Oh, God, yes.
And also, you didn't even mention that. It does seem like, you know, if you're going to beat the Jets, you're going to run the ball down their throats, and I don't think so.
And they can't run at all. They have the worst run game in our ratings. In our ratings, the Chargers had the biggest difference between pass offense and run offense of any team in 15 years.
And the I guess the X factor would be if Mr. Sanchez can make a couple plays. He single-handedly caused me to pick the Bengals last week, and I thought if he hits the play to Braylon Edwards, he's 13 for 15 in that game.
He played quite well. Now, you can't expect that 2 straight weeks. Because he didn't play that well for most of the season.
Now, when Roethlisberger was a rookie, didn't he get better as the year went along? If I remember,
But Sanchez didn't get better as the year went along.
Well, that's
he just got better last week.
But maybe
he just got better in this game.
So maybe he's starting a late streak.
Maybe, you don't know, but you can't count on that. Yeah, that's possible, but it's also possible that was just he just had a good game and it happens.
Well, here's what the problem is. I'm going to talk myself into the Jets, and then Sanchez is going to kill me, and I'm going to be like, God, why did I do that?
It's more likely than Philip Rivers killing you. But it really is a good matchup for the Jets. It really is. This is closer than people would think.
And would you say the same for Baltimore, Indy, for the Ravens?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if the Colts are a good matchup for anybody. They're so spectacular at what they do, and they're nicely rested. Now, here's the thing. Their run defense hasn't been that good this year. You know, the Colts, not as hideous as Colts teams of years past. But if they're able to run, if the Ravens are able to run, then they keep Flacco out of third and long. And that makes Mathis and Freeney not as important, you know, as they would be otherwise. And the Colts have been a poor defense against play action. I told you this week I'd have more good matchup stuff for you.
Yes.
And the Ravens use play action more than almost any team in the league. So, you know, in those ways, that offense is built to go up against them. On the other hand, the fact is that while the Ravens have gotten healthy in a lot of places, they still have injuries in their secondary. Their secondary is not very good. You know, it's nice to have Ed Reed back, but they've got problems elsewhere. And we know that they can take away any receiver from Peyton Manning, and he will find the others. And I think he's going to end up using a lot of Dallas Clark, using a lot of Austin Colley and Pierre Garçon, because they can put Foxworth, they can have Reed paying extra attention to Wayne, and Manning will just go elsewhere. And so I think that while it's a good matchup for the Ravens offense, I just think that the Colts offense is good enough that they'll overcome it, and that it makes sense for the Colts to be the favorite in this game.
Would you say a winnable game for the Ravens if Flacco plays well?
Oh, sure. Well, listen, I mean, any game is winnable. And
you know what I mean, though.
Yeah, it's a reasonable matchup for the Ravens. To be honest, it's funny. It's almost like the Colts and Chargers would have rather had the other teams.
Yeah,
like flipped around, the Chargers against the Ravens and the Colts. But what if the Colts have beaten the Ravens something like 7 straight times? And I don't normally believe in stats like that. But those teams have played roughly every year or so for the last 4 or 5 years. And we are talking about the same coaches, the same schemes. It's not like when you quote a stat like that about a team that changes their coaches every 2 years. So, I like the Colts in this game.
So, gun to your head, AFC upset pick. If you had to make one of the two, you would go with
the
Jets. Okay. Mm-hmm. NFC, Cowboys-Vikings.
Which, by the way, sets up the game I wanted to see this week, which is Jets-Colts Part 2, take your Curtis Painter and shove it.
That would be awesome. Hey, you know, it's kind of shades of Pat's Giants in a weird way, where you had something really like a weird sort of game that nobody expected. In this case, Pat's Giants was incredible. Jets-Colts was awful.
Both teams want to prove.
Yes.
The Jets want to prove that they didn't just win that game because of the Curtis Painter. And the Colts want to prove that the fact that game was closed when Manning went out was BS.
That
so
would be great.
That would be a really great AFC championship.
It really would. And Curtis Painter, I think, I don't know how he'd feel.
We get a
it.
Special Curtis Painter cam. Just the whole game, just watch. Is he putting on his helmet?
I think Curtis Painter's rooting for Colts Chargers. Vikings, Cowboys.
Well, this one's interesting because I threw it into the system and it actually came out with the Vikings favored, even though right now, by our numbers, the weighted DVOA, including the playoffs, the Vikings are the worst team left in the playoffs and the Cowboys are the second best after Baltimore. And looking at this game subjectively, my thought was, oh, my God, Dallas should be favored. You look at the way the Vikings offensive lines played in the last few weeks of the season. We did our annual trips to NFL Films and watched film with Greg Cosell and Jaws, and you just watched the Vikings offensive line get destroyed. Brian McKinney trying to block DeMarcus Ware, it's not going to be easy. And they were getting beat on double teams up the middle by moderately good defensive tackles. So I don't know how those guys are going to block Jay Ratliff to get the room for Adrian Peterson to go running. And then on top of that, the fact is that their pass defense is 22nd in our ratings this year, even though they have a top five pass rush. Their secondary has been awful. So how on earth are they going to cover those Cowboys receivers, especially knowing that Romo can get away from a pass rush to make a play? You know, he's not just going to sit back there and take a sack. That being said, it's very strange. My numbers came out liking the Vikings. I have to disagree with my numbers here. I just think the Cowboys are really on a roll right now, and I think they really hit up against the weaknesses of the Vikings right now.
So you think the numbers say that the Vikings can run the ball? That could be the only explanation.
Yeah, I think that it's that. And that, their run defense is still good, and their passing game has been great. No, I think that the Cowboys' cornerbacks can cover the Vikings' receivers more than the other way around. But the fact is that the Vikings have had an excellent passing game this year. And there are a lot of guys to cover. I mean, if they throw them all out in there, you've got to cover Percy Harvin, Berrien, Sidney Rice, and Vishante Shanko. It's a lot of guys to cover.
Yeah, the one thing that makes me tough to – or that I don't know what to expect from the Vikings is that Harvin gave them so much in the first 2 months of the season. And then he got...
Yeah, you don't know what's up with the migraine headaches.
Yeah, it's just... So when you talk about your weighted ratings and all that stuff, Harvin not prominently involved in the second half of the season for them.
Right.
He's probably the key guy.
You wonder about that last game. I did a radio interview earlier today, and somebody said about the Vikings stepping it up in the last week. And I said, what do you mean the Giants stepping it down?
Right.
I mean, they looked awesome in that last week after not looking good for a couple of weeks. But at the same time, God, how much do you really count on that given well, what happened to the Giants in the last couple weeks of the season? The numbers thing is really weird, because if you look at their total rating, the Cowboys should be favored. And subjectively, I think the Cowboys should be favored. But when I put in all the little splits and individual things, I don't know, came up Vikings.
I worry about the Vikings being able to block Dallas. Like, if I took the Vikings, I love the way that Dallas front seven's playing.
And I hate the way that the Vikings offensive line is playing.
Yeah,
thing is, McKinney's been having problems with the passing. Loedholt's a better pass blocker than he's a run blocker, the right tackle. But, you know, Ware will be on McKinney's side. You know, he'll probably jump a couple times. You know, I like the Cowboys.
Worried about home field advantage, too, because if you remember last year, we had Joe look this up for the other podcast we did, but they had a lot of unsold seats last time. There were a lot of Eagles fans in the building, and I think we are going to have some Cowboy fans in that game.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Last game, Arizona-New Orleans.
Yeah, this is another one that, you know, you wouldn't think at it looking for the whole year, but based on how they're playing right now, honestly, it's pretty even. And it really does seem like it's first team to 50 wins.
Right.
Because of the Saints have been fading a little bit. And their defense faded a little bit. I don't know what got into those guys when they played the Patriots, but that secondary has been completely different ever since that game.
Yeah.
And trying to cover the Cardinals, especially with early Doucette kind of having his big breakout game, that's going to be tough. At the same time, there's no way the Cardinals can cover all the guys from the Saints. I mean, they were getting pressure with only three or four pass rushers against Green Bay. That's never going to happen against the Saints, even with the Saints' offensive line having some problems in recent weeks. Drew Brees gets rid of the ball. He finds guys, even when his offensive line is having trouble. I think a lot of it comes down to figuring out why the Saints have declined a bit in recent weeks, and can they figure out what's been going wrong and undo it.
When you crunch the numbers, what did it show?
It showed basically 50-50.
Wow.
I know, because we think of the Saints as being much better, but just the particular matchups of this game, it liked the Cardinals a lot. And I think that if you look at the Cardinals in the last couple of weeks, and especially the way they played against the Packers, where really, even though it was a close game, by numbers, they dominated. And then you look at what's happened to the Saints in the last couple of weeks of the season, not even including the last week when they didn't play Brees. It really looks like a close, close game.
This is the one game that I feel home field advantage could play a factor.
You want to believe that, and except for the fact that the Saints have lost two straight at home,
including
Tampa Bay.
No, but I'm saying, you saw the crowd the way they were against the Pats. And I thought the crowd was awesome against Dallas. Dallas just made plays.
That's why I'm wondering how important it is.
Well, maybe Arizona.
The Cardinals won a lot of road games to make it happen
last
year.
Yeah, they did. And they're used to playing in a dome. Yeah.
And I mean, listen, I said before this started, the Cardinals were the lowest NFC team in our numbers, but I really saw the NFC as being wide open and any of those teams could win. And the Cardinals were better than the numbers said. And I still believe that. And I think that this game is a real toss-up.
You said that the Saints secondary was so good in that Pats game and then wasn't that good after, and it was hard to explain. I wonder, you know, after watching the Ravens, it almost seemed like they knew every play that's coming. I wonder if the Pats offense would just become so predictable that good coaches knew how to pick it apart.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Here's an interesting matchup stat, though. The Saints this year were excellent against opposition number one receivers, but very poor against the number two and three receivers.
Oh.
The Cardinals were very poor against number one receivers and excellent against number two and three receivers.
Hmm. Any coaching special teams mismatches that you could smell out from these four games?
No, because, I mean, none of these teams were really that. I mean, even if there's a mismatch, none of these teams were particularly great or particularly terrible in special teams. The Vikings were pretty good at special teams in the first half of the season, but that kind of declined a little bit.
Yeah.
And their best aspect is kick returns with Harvin and Buehler, or Buckler, I'm not exactly sure how he pronounces his name, from Dallas. The kickoff specialist kind of neutralizes that with the touchbacks, especially since they'll be in a dome. Mm. So I don't see particularly, you know, any special teams really major mismatches.
Hey, when you have like 2 seconds, can you run the numbers to see if Jordy Nelson's kick return performance was the worst in the history of football on Sunday?
There are some pretty bad ones, man. There are some pretty bad ones.
It couldn't be worse than Jordy Nelson. I'm going to run straight into people and just go flying backwards every time.
No, there are guys that have dropped. There are guys who fumbled 2 and 3 kick returns in a game, man. I mean,
that was unbelievable. I've never seen a guy not have a move, and he had 15 kickoffs to practice.
It may not be the best strategy. Yeah, it was really interesting. The Packers' biggest weakness is their punters, so they sort of solved that problem, didn't they?
Mm. So you like, to recap, Cards and Saints you think is 50-50?
Yeah.
Cowboys-Vikings, you don't understand it, but the system...
The numbers like the Vikings, and I like the Cowboys.
Chargers-Jets you think is 50-50?
Yeah. And I think I say the Jets. It's really weird to say. They've gotten lucky with two really good matchups for them. But on the same time, Rivers has played so well this year that they could really neutralize the whole Rivers thing.
And then Colts Ravens. You think the Colts are now undervalued?
Yeah, I think the Colts are undervalued.
All right. Good luck. We'll look forward to your picks on footballoutsiders.com on Thursday, right?
Once I've had a little bit more to look at this. Yeah, probably more like Friday morning, yeah.
All right. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, man.
Aaron Schatz, thank you. All right, time for our cleanup hitter, our Vegas insider from ESPN The Magazine. You can read him on The Insider on ESPN.com. He's on the Subway Fresh Take hotline right now. Chad Millman, you sniffed out this Arizona thing yesterday.
I felt good about it.
Yeah. You know what? In the old days, I would have too. My head is spinning.
The whole thing is flummoxing, but what happened that made you not sniff it out?
You know what? I threw away my playoff manifesto and I went with the new rules. And, you know what? Once the line shifted to where it was a 6-point shift, it became clear that Arizona was going to win somehow in some way.
Because that was insane, by the way. That was, you could see that coming from when we spoke last week that, yeah. This line, it was so out of control. Every single guy who was betting on this game was betting on the Packers. And the more, we even talked about it last week, the more it sort of developed, the more it became clear that, you know, this team was on a great run. But the Cardinals, they remind me of a team that all of a sudden they've gone from being sort of stupidly bad to being a team that is insanely confident and plays when it needs to play. And yeah. Certainly they did that yesterday.
So the sharps, usually they sniff it out when the line shifts that much, and they wait and they wait and they wait, and then they jump on the team that nobody's taken. Did that happen yesterday?
Not as far as I can tell. They kept taking the Packers. I mean, there might have been some late play on the Cardinals, you know, when it flipped as much as it had. But from everyone I spoke to, it was Packers, Packers, Packers all the time. And they might have stopped taking the Packers when the line became Packers plus one or Packers minus one or Packers minus 1.5. But they had made so much of a play early in the week on the Packers when they were, you know, 2.5-point underdogs that, you know, I don't know if they bought back enough to make up for whatever they were doing on the other side.
So this is just a terrible line. Rarely seen from Vegas, but it just seems like they had the wrong line for the game.
Well, how do you figure? They put out the 2.5, and they had the Cardinals favored, and the Cardinals won by 6. And so, in reality, they had the right line, and everyone who was betting wrong.
But come on, this is your theory. You said Vegas's job is to attract an equal amount of action on both sides.
No, I never said that. The Vegas's job isn't to attract an equal amount of action. Vegas's job is just to entice people to make a bet. A lot of times these guys don't care which way they're going. They, ideally, in a perfect world, they're getting action on both sides. But a lot of times these guys like to gamble like anyone else, and they can make a lot more money if they pick a side. And I know just as many bookmakers in Vegas who like to sweat the games on Sunday and like to know which side they're playing as they do like to only be getting whatever the VIG is and playing both sides and having equal money, because all they're trying to do is make a number of people want to bet. Whether or not they bet both sides is certainly important, but it's secondary to getting a number that draws people in.
I'm shocked by this. I always thought their job was to attract as even of a bet as possible, and they make the 10%.
No, they want to bet, man. I mean, obviously, they're not as big bettors as the guys who do this for a living. But most bookmakers I know don't mind being on a side. It, you know, not because they want to sweat, and, you know, they all work for large corporations and they're responsible for making numbers. But bookmakers like to sweat and they like to be on a side and they like to win. And, you know, they're okay being heavy on one side over another if they feel comfortable about where they put their line and where the line is moving. So it's not necessarily true that they feel like they have to have even money.
All right. Well, in the old days, I would have sniffed out this Arizona thing. I think I might have to retire. I might be like Belichick. I think the game has passed me by.
It's over for you.
I never ever thought there'd be a day in a playoff game where a line shifted 6 points, and I bet on that team anyway.
It happens to the best of us.
Yeah. I need to go back to the drawing board. I need to go back to my roots. Maybe I need to spend like a week in Vegas. Like,
I was just going to say to you, you need like a good weekend in Vegas to sort of, it's like a good schvitz. You need to steam it out, sort of walk away from the family, get to Vegas, and get back to your roots.
Well, what's funny is I hated last week's slate. I really did. I didn't like it. I never felt strongly about any of the games. And this week I feel the complete opposite. I already know where I'm going with all four games. Let's find out where you're going.
So, well, it's funny you say that because I felt so much better about certain games last week than I do this week.
Oh, I love this week. And although it would be kind of fun to try to go 0-11 for the playoffs, I feel like I'd make my own. It would be like when the Nets are trying to break the 9-win record for the NBA.
Right.
I'm 0-4 right now. If I go into the title games 0-8, I don't know. I think that's a compelling story. but AFC, so we got the Jets, who thought they were going to Indy, now going to San Diego. What do you think about that one?
That's a big. The spreads I've seen are anywhere from 7.5 to 9, and
yeah,
all of those seem pretty high to me. When I looked over the scores for the year, the Chargers had actually, when they've played good teams, generally they've played them close. They've won a lot, but they've generally played very good teams very close. And so the Jets being on the roll they're on, and as Rex Ryan has said, they need to run the ball and they need to play good run defense. And if anything, the Chargers right now are a stronger passing team, and they are also on defense, they're giving up like 4.5 yards a carry. So it seems to play into the Jets' strengths. And I would say that this number to me looks like a good way to play the Jets, because if you're getting +9, which in some of the online books you can, that's a huge number to be playing in the playoffs for a team that is as hot as the Jets are right now. For a guy like Mark Sanchez going back to Southern California where he's going to be pretty comfortable, and a team like San Diego that, even though they've won a lot, has generally played good teams close. They haven't been killing it when they're big favorites against good teams.
Do you think that one of the reasons the line is high is, I always think they're factoring in teases with this, and that they like to get over like the 8 hump, because then for teases it makes it harder and stuff like that. Is that, or am I making that up?
I've never heard anyone say that. When I look at it from a much purer perspective, and I just think this is the number that they're most comfortable with people coming in on. I feel like they think people are going to come in on the Jets. And in a couple places that opened at 9, they moved down to 8.5 and to 8. So already some of the early plays have come in on the Jets. I mean, it's a big, big number. But I also think that they're thinking they might get a little bit of early play on the Jets at +9. And as the week gets closer, if the number gets smaller, the Chargers, you know, if, you know, we talked about public teams last week, and in that there are teams that public bettors who aren't the wise guys and they aren't the professionals, those are the teams that everybody thinks they know, and because the Chargers have been winning, people are more likely to bet the favorite, and so they'd bet the Chargers. And so if they see the Chargers as a touchdown favorite, they'll probably get the number going back up a little bit.
So the other game, Colts-Ravens, have people backed off the Colts? Like, were you surprised that that line was lower than a touchdown?
No, actually, you know what's funny is, this is a sad state, but last night while I was reading to my kid going to bed, I was trying to think of what this line would be, and I had it at 5. Partially because I thought that the Ravens showed so well against the Pats that people were going to have that in mind when they were betting this week, and that bookmakers would account for that. But then I looked at the Colts' course of the season. They're not a team to me that when I think about spectacular play, they stand out ever. Like, Peyton Manning might be one of the least spectacular, greatest players of all time. Like, I can't remember a single play he has ever made. And yet I look at their against spread record, and they were something like 10-5-1, and that includes losses in the last two games of the year when they weren't trying. You know, it was against the Jets and against the Bills. And so I look at that and I'm thinking, wow. And they were winning. I mean, they were winning. They were covering against good teams. And I saw that and I'm thinking, fantastic. I think the 6.5 is a good number. I would actually bet the Colts on that.
Yeah. I think it's too low, too. Yeah. And as we talked about this last week, anticipating this week, round two is the round where everybody gets a little too excited about the teams that look good in round one.
Exactly.
And you find some deals in the mix. This
and I
might
think,
be one of them.
I definitely think this is one of them. I think the Ravens caught the Patriots on a day when they weren't at their best, on a downturn at the end of a weird season. And the Ravens have been playing so well, like we talked about, so well against really good teams. And they just happen to get a good team on a bad day. And I don't think the Colts will be a good team on a bad day next weekend.
Cowboys-Vikings, a little bit along the same lines of what I just said. People very excited about the Cowboys right now. Not as enthusiastic about the Vikings. Do you think maybe the Cowboys overvalued in this one?
I do, yeah. You know, but I'm never going to be... Like, to me, the Cowboys are always going to be posers until they win it all. Like, I just can't buy into the Cowboys. I can't bet with the Cowboys. I feel like I'm a chump when I go with the Cowboys. The problem is that the Vikings have been so bad. And, like, you know, they've really been tanking the last few weeks, too. And so this, to me, the rule is you don't have to bet every game on the board. And if I were not betting every game on the board, then I would pass on this game. It seems just sort of difficult to show. One of the axioms, though, is if you can get a home team for less than a field goal, it's usually a pretty good bet. And so Minnesota, in a lot of places, you can get it at 2.5. It's showing 3 in some places, but there's other places where it's showing 2.5. So if I were to go one way, that's the way I would go.
Although, in this case, the home team might have about 20,000 fans of the other team at the game.
Well, that's always the case with the Cowboys game.
Yeah.
There's no bigger public team than the Cowboys.
I'm with you. I think this one's a stay away.
Yeah.
It's the only one that I don't really have a strong opinion on. And I just think it's going to be one of those games. You have two weird coaches. You know, who the hell knows what's going to happen with those two guys? Favre is so hit or miss. I can't tell if Minnesota's going to be able to run the ball down Dallas' throat or not. I'm guessing probably not, but I don't know what to expect from Percy Harvin. Is he going to be the Percy Harvin from the first 2 months of the season or the guy from the last 2 months? I don't know. There's too many variables.
Well, what's scary is Dallas' defense is so freaking fast, and playing on AstroTurf, it's like, what advantage does Adrian Peterson have if, you know, every other guy on the field is just as fast as he is and they're playing so aggressively? So then you're thinking about, well, can Tony Romo beat the Vikings defense? And who knows? I mean, in a home game, loud stadium against a team that's ramped up, it's just like, there's so many, you're like you said, there's so many variables, it's a stay away from me.
I'm leaning toward Dallas just because the Brad Childress, Brett Favre combo scares the living hell out of me. That's really the only reason.
You need a reason, right?
Last one, Arizona, New Orleans.
I'm surprised this opened at a touchdown. Because New Orleans, the last 10 weeks of the year, New Orleans was 2-8 against the spread. They could not cover. There was no money to be made on New Orleans. And so, if anything, I'd be playing the over in this game. It's 57, which is a huge number. But look at the numbers these two teams are putting up. I mean, every single time they're both playing against good teams, they're putting up 35 points. And, you know, the Cardinals, like I said, they just feel like a team that knows how to play well when it's time to play well. But what's interesting about the Saints is that even though they tanked the last 10 games of the year and were horrible against the spread, when they played good teams, they blew them out. They blew out the Giants when the Giants were 4-0. They blew out the Patriots. So they had success playing good teams when they had to do it and covering. That said, I'd still go with the Cardinals in this game, or I'd go with the over.
Isn't the rule of the over-unders is that when a game looks like it's going to so obviously be over, it never goes over?
Possibly, but sometimes you got to, you know, you got to choose a side. I mean, everybody was saying that the game yesterday was so obviously going to be over between the Packers and the Cardinals, and they scored 96 points or whatever.
Three TNTs. Saints cards over under down to 47. Jets getting 18, and the Colts getting 3.5. Who blows it? It's a pretty good one.
It's a pretty good one.
It's a pretty good three-teamer.
That is a real... What did you say the Colts was?
The Jets... The Colts would be getting 3.5. Aren't they 6.5 right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Colts would be getting 3.5. They'd have to lose by 4. I guess that would be the weak link.
You know what? As soon as you said Jets 18, I thought to myself, they're going to lose by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, maybe you don't throw the Jets in. If you're going to play the Jets, it almost seems like it makes the most sense to play the money line and hope they win.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what's so interesting about the Jets is, you know, here in New York, we're so wrapped in this vortex of excitement around the Jets that I keep thinking to myself, if I'll talk to guys in Vegas and they'll be like, all the public is going to be on the favorite in this game. And I'll think to myself, how could the public be on the favorite in whoever the Jets are playing? The Jets so clearly are the better team because that's all anybody here is talking about.
Yeah.
So it's so easy to get wrapped up in the idea that the Jets are actually good that as soon as you said Jets 18, I'm thinking there's no way they're covering this game.
I will say that out of the candidates to be the team that we all over-evaluated based on their round one performance, the Jets are the best candidate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Carson Palmer was awful, and the Bengals, you know, were, in retrospect, probably the worst playoff team.
The Bengals are not the Chargers.
No, and they can throw the ball, and they can... The only thing is, as we talked about on this podcast before with other guests, it's a great matchup for the Jets. They can run the ball. Chargers have trouble stopping the run.
Right.
They have trouble stopping the run. Chargers can't really run the ball. So it is. This is the ideal team for them to play. Hey, what did Fezzik do last weekend?
You know what? I think I didn't catch up with him this morning yet.
Oh.
He didn't call me back. What can I do?
Maybe he didn't do well.
It's possible, although Fezzik does well. Fezzik is Fezzik. He had been thinking about Dallas-Philadelphia, and we know how that turned out. So I'll check in with him, and I'll shoot you an email, or we can talk about it next week. But he definitely... You know, whatever he's playing is what I'm going to play this week. I'll call him and find out what he's doing. You know, one other thing I want to say about the Chargers is that earlier in the year, say the middle of the year, even when they were in the middle of this win streak, I would talk to wise guys and I'd say, you know, they were not high on the Chargers at all until it was the end of the year. And I'd be like, why don't you like the Chargers? And they go, because there's only one or two coaches who we actually incorporate into our formula when we're doing our power rating for teams that are actually worth tangible amounts of points. And one was Belichick in a good way, and one was North Turner in a bad way. So for the entire season, wise guys were going against Turner as much as they were going against the Chargers. Like, he is that much of a mover in terms of how little confidence they had in him.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's actually, it was stunning to me.
Why him, though, and not Brad Childress?
Right, because Turner has a longer history of not being very good in clutch moments. You know, Childress, it's only the second year that this team's in the playoffs, and it's only his third year with the team. Turner's been around forever, you know, coaching teams that were supposed to be good and not being very good, and then coaching this Chargers team and not getting to the Super Bowl when they were expected to get to the Super Bowl. And as much as the Chargers seem to love North Turner, The knock has been that is the one weak link on this team. And so if you're doing a power rating and there's only one weak link, you're going to incorporate that into your rating.
I thought he would have shed that after the way they played in New England in 2007 against the 17-0 Pats and then last year beating the Colts.
Nope. He didn't because they started so bad this year. They started so bad, and when the season started, one of the surefire, most popular bets in Vegas, you know, when they do season win totals, was the Chargers. And in most places, it was about 12, I think. And so, you know, most people had the Chargers over 12 because they were looking at it and saying, okay, they're going to play the Chiefs. That's 2 wins. They're going to play the Raiders. That's 2 wins. They're going to play the Broncos. That's 2 wins. So they're thinking, okay, we're going to get 6 wins no matter what. We only need to get 7 more wins out of the season in order to cover our bet. That seems like a pretty good deal. And so they were all playing the Chargers over 12. And when he, you know, when they came out and they lost, what, the first two or three games, everyone immediately thought, all right, this is North Turner who can't get the best team in football ready. And so immediately that was incorporated into their rating, and he was one of those guys who sort of has a tangible impact on it.
Stunning. Hey, it's hard for me to believe Wade Phillips also. I mean, if North Turner is going to get that, then why wouldn't Wade Phillips?
Because the Cowboys have never been as touted and as talented as the Chargers have been during Phillips' tenure. They always, you know, they never lived up to the expectations, and they never had as much talent. I mean, the Chargers have so much talent. You know, Tony Romo has always been a question mark. Phillip Rivers, the last 3 years, has been a phenomenal talent, and nobody has questioned whether or not this guy could win a Super Bowl as a quarterback. Tony Romo, people are questioning whether he should be the starter next year if the Cowboys didn't turn it around the way they had. Look at Phillip Rivers and never loses in December. Tony Romo never won in December. So, you know, there's almost every other team has X factors other than the coach, and the Chargers just don't.
So last week, the cards grew on you as the week went along. You were pretty consistent on Twitter and in your column. Do you have a game this week that you like?
I like Indy Baltimore. I think the Colts could win this thing, you know, hands down. I think Baltimore, you know, we were just talking about teams that look better. The Ravens, to me, are one of those teams. Joe Flacco did nothing in that game. You know, he's got an injured hip, as far as I'm seeing reports. I think Indy, as much as the controversy was at the end of the year, this is one of those teams. They're robotic, and they're insular, and they sort of believe from a top-down philosophy in what they're doing. And even if some of the players weren't thrilled with having to sit, Dwight Freeney is thrilled that he didn't have to play for three straight weeks, and he can be healthy again. So to get a healthy Dwight Freeney going against a gimpy Joe Flacco in Indianapolis when they're rested, and a team that I think sort of performed well but looked better because the team they were playing in the Pats wasn't very good, that to me seems like an opportunity.
I like it as long as it stays 7 or under.
Yeah, I don't like it higher than that. But I don't think it's going to go higher than that. I think this is one of those games where it's going to stick around 6.5, 6, and 7 through the week, and then it might get pushed back up to 7 when we get closer to the weekend.
Well, the other interesting thing that we really don't usually see in round two is that you have three underdogs that will be at least 2-1 money line. In the Jets' case, it'll probably be like +275, +280.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to go.
People will be playing those teams, which usually in round two, there's a couple 10-point favorites, and, you know, you never bet the underdog money.
Right. No, it's a great point. Money lines are a great option. People never bet money lines. They're confusing, and honestly, that's why baseball – To me, that's why, and I've written this in the column before, to me, that's why baseball has fallen off as America's pastime, is because it's difficult to bet. Nobody understands what money lines are. But money lines are basically choose whoever you want to win, and you don't have to worry about the point spread. You're just making a straight-up bet, and the odds are different. It's a great way to make bets like this. If you like the Jets, but you know, you're afraid of certain things, you just play them.
Especially if you have an online account, which is unfortunately illegal and nobody does. But if you did, you can put the +300 with the +280, and it's like, oh, I can bet 100 to win $817.13. I'm in.
It seems like such easy money. Why don't I have it right now?
Yeah, it is. It is funny, like when you're in Vegas and you tell the guys, like, I'm gonna go the Jets money line 232 along with the Cards money line 248 for 100. And the guy always gives you that look like, what? It's like, no, people rarely parlay money lines, and actually it's really good value.
It's a hugely good value. Money lines are a great way to play. I mean, the spread is actually much, much harder. Obviously, the value isn't as great depending on what you're betting, but it's hard to do this. It's, you know, there's a reason why if people are betting 60%, you know, they're getting rich. It's a very, very hard thing to do, bet against the point spread. Everyone should bet the money line.
Like, for instance, Colts are like probably, I would guess, -240. Jets, I would say, would be like +290, something like that. And then the Cards are probably like +220, +240 in that range. If you said, I think those three teams are winning those games, and you team them together, it's like it would probably be over 10-1.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You're right.
And, And basically you're saying, I think one out of every 10 times this could happen, this combination of these three teams winning.
And so if you
kind
do that, if you win once and you're betting 100 times every 100 every time, you've had a good time and you haven't lost any money.
There you go. We're creating a new nation of gamblers. Chad Millman, you posting your picks on Friday or your not your picks,
I'll
your
do
matchups?
I'll do the line moves column on Friday, and then I'll do some twittering about which who's going which way on Saturday and Sunday.
We only care about Fezzik. We don't care about anybody else. Just find out what Fezzik did last week and find out what he's doing this week.
All right, I'll call him.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Target the sun off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway is home to the famous $5 footlong, so celebrate your favorite Subway famous $5 footlong, like the classic BLT or the Big Bowl Black Forest ham and cheese. All stacked your way with the meats, cheeses, and fresh, crisp veggies you love.